Welcome to Varsity House Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Crawford. On this episode, co-hosted by Elliot Montanez at Lyrical Lemonade and our special guest, Julian Love from the Seattle Seahawks and Notre Dame. Appreciate you coming on again.
Yeah, second time's a charm. Thanks for having me.
Coming off the season you had, it was, you know, a great season. Accolades, my first time Pro Bowler, obviously a new team as well in Seattle. Kind of just, you know, talk about that transition.
Yeah, it was a weird one for sure. I mean, coming from New York, like you said, Notre Dame, you know, you're in the media spotlight. You're talked about, you're the team, you know, good or bad, people are paying attention to you. And Seattle's been secretly, I feel like, successful for years. I mean, since Pete Carroll got there, obviously with the Legion of Boom era, then even recently, I think they're the highest, you know, winning percentage team in the league, but no one talks about it because it's Seattle. And getting out there, man, it was just a culture shift. I was coming from, you know, having three head coaches in New York. I enjoyed my time there, but, you know, I had to always adapt. Every year was new. And Pete Carroll, man, he's the one who sold me on Seattle. Meeting him for the first time, flying out there, I mean, dude knows football. He has juice, energy. He lets guys be themselves. And so it was just different. And going out there, kind of had nothing to lose. I mean, I was going in there to be the third safety behind Quandre and Jamal and work with them. And, yeah, I just kind of was thinking about, man, just ball. Let's do what you got to do. Have some fun. And I think the results show, thankfully.
Pete Carroll's got to be, what, a top five coach living right now? What was that like playing for him?
Dude, it was special. I mean, that guy was the oldest coach in football. But you see him doing like sprints on like Thursdays. He's throwing routes to us. He's always throwing the ball. He has a hoop in the team room, a basketball hoop, and we had shoot-offs, I mean, every other day. It was just like, it was loose. It was energetic. I mean, he let guys be themselves. He let the Florida boys do their thing, be Florida boys. He let just me be me. It was special. I think he got it. And it was really cool to be a safety for him because he understood DBs. He understood defenses. And, yeah, I mean, I just really appreciated having him. It was good for my game.
My bad, really quick. Do you know what kind of gum Pete Carroll chews? Because that's like one of his things. He aggressively is always chewing gum. Did you ever see what type it was?
No, that's a good question. We did have just trays of gum available outside the field. different types. I mean, you got Wrigley, you got Juicy Fruit, all the type. I feel like he was maybe like a Big Red type of guy or something like that.
Why Seattle? Knowing that you were going to be in that third position and knowing that, you know, leaving the team that you were the starter at, why, you know, take that chance and go all the way out there to Seattle?
Yeah, it's funny. When I first got the call from my agent about Seattle wants to fly you out, I said, why? At first, I was like, oh, why? I mean, Jamal was top three highest paid safety, and Quandre was probably top 10. He was well, they had two well paid safeties. And I'm coming off a year where I was balling. I was a captain for the Giants, and I was looking to be kind of continue to be that guy for whatever team. And then the market just wasn't what it was. You know, Jesse Bates signed that high deal, then everything else just kind of wasn't as high. Everyone was taking kind of lower offers. And so you see a lot of these 1-2 year deals being taken in my market class. And so honestly, Seattle just had one of the best numbers on the table for me. And they were winning. I mean, they were in the playoffs the previous year. They had a ton of talent, ton of draft picks the upcoming year. And so it was promising. And all the draft picks from the previous year were hitting. Like Tariq Woolen was a draft pick, that was a hit. K-9, Abe Lucas, Charles Cross, like that's a young core. And so everything looked promising for it. And we underachieved this year, which is the craziest part, but it was fun just to be around so much talent and just so much juice and energy. And so it was kind of just a bet on yourself type of deal.
Y'all were definitely my sleeper pick for Super Bowl champs.
Man.
Because when you look at the roster, I mean, it's star-studded, especially bringing in Witherspoon and then bringing in JSN on the other side of the ball. And I was just like, they got every piece.
You know? Gino's balling.
Gino's nice.
Yeah. Veteran experience. I mean, yeah, I think we finished, you know, some teams, I've been on some teams, you know, you finish 9-8, it's a moral victory for the season or whatever. And 9-8, I mean, just and not making the playoffs was devastating for that team. I mean, there's some games we let go that it was killer. And we know what we have. I think it's good that the core is young, and we can continue going. But, yeah, I mean, the expectation definitely was not met.
Who else is in that division? It's the Niners, yeah. You, Raiders?
Rams and the Cardinals.
Rams and Cardinals. Tough division.
Tough division.
You know,
yeah. Tough division, especially with the Niners. Obviously, that, you know, right now they're the standard in the NFC. Talented roster, well coached. And then the Rams were kind of a sleeper team this year. But I think when Matt Stafford's healthy, man, anything's on the table. That dude's just, I think one of the best quarterbacks in the game still, mm-hmm. when he's healthy. And, you know, they had young Kyron who had a great year, Kyron Williams, our guy. And yeah. And so we lost twice to them, which was a shocker for sure. Then the Cardinals, you know, are rebuilding and kind of have some young guys on the way up. But, yeah, tough division, and you got to compete for sure.
Yeah, you got to bring it every time you play the Niners, I'm sure.
Hell yeah.
And then even the Rams, the so many things that they do on offense with the motioning. You obviously talked about Stafford mm-hmm. a little bit, but then you got Puka, who came onto the scene. Cooper Kupp, I think he was hurt a little bit this year, but obviously he's a great player. And so being able to, you know, go against those players, and then you talk about the Niners, CMC, Ayuk, Kittle. So being able to play against those players, how much did, you know, going against DK, going against JSN, K9 and mm-hmm. Geno and all your offensive weapons help you prepare for the Niners, the Cardinals, and even Rams. The Rams?
Yeah, I mean, I think talent-wise, I mean, you can go against anybody on our team and, you know, be challenged. I think JSN as a rookie brought some stuff to the table that is special, and I think he's going to continue to build. DK is DK. I mean, you don't get he's one of one in this league just from a athletic standpoint. You know, he's a beast. And Tyler Lockett, I think, is just always succeeding, always catching passes, always scoring touchdowns. Mm-hmm. Man's been producing for years, and he's just under the radar.
Yes.
And so it's cool to be going against that. We had three good tight ends, too, and Kobe Parkinson, Will Disley, and Noah Fant. Like, it was a cool situation, you know, but the division, and I don't know. I feel like I have a chip on my shoulder that I can guard or compete with anybody, and I always thought it was a fun challenge, you know, playing the Niners this year. You know, CMC's top of his game, George Kittle, Debo, Ayuk, like you said, and Brock Purdy had a great year again. Yeah. You know, that's the standard. That's, I think, who we're trying to compete with, and it's no secret. I mean, they had a shot last year. They played the Eagles to go to the Super Bowl. And then this year, obviously, they were the ones in the NFC. And so, you know, you got to always try to top that team in your conference, and they're that right now.
Yeah.
The replacement of Pete, do you think it was because you talked, I don't know if it was, you talked about it a little off camera and just how great of a guy he is and the coach that he is. Do you think the replacement of Pete is to try to get over that hump? Because obviously I think the Seahawks have, the roster has been what it is. And you talked about one of the best winning percentages. So he's winning games. Like, he's putting a great, you know, team, great talent on the field, but it's just not, you know, getting to that championship game, not getting to that Super Bowl. I mean, you obviously in the locker room, what were some things that you think might have caused his, you know, departure?
I think you kind of hit on the head. It's just trying to get over that hump. I think that was the decision was made based off of that. Right now in our division, you have, you know, McVay and you have Shanahan, two of the game's best innovators and minds. And the youngest guy on the route on the defensive side of the ball is Mike McDonald. And so that's why I think he was ultimately hired and the decision was Pete was made. To get over that hump, to be innovative, to kind of progress, which is always tough. I mean, it's a living legend that you're letting go, and you know, you go from the oldest coach in the league to the youngest coach in the league. That's a lot of risk that they had, but that's, you know, you got to compete. You're the competing or you're not, Pete used to always say, and I think that was the decision for sure.
What an interesting coaching cycle it was. The fact that, like, Pete Carroll, Bill Belichick, Mike Vrabel, like, there was a lot of big name coaches available for the first time in a long time. And I feel like you don't see things like that. Also, with Pete Carroll and Bill Belichick, I don't know their exact ages, but they're in their 70s too. So like, how long could you really coach for? You know, that's a strenuous schedule.
Man, those guys, I think few people are built for, or like just born to coach ball, be around football. And I mean, those two are a prime example of that. They're just football knowers for sure.
When you had Pete, you ever ask him about like the USC days or anything like that?
100%. When I first went out there, I was wearing a Notre Dame shirt. Just, I don't know why. And he, you know, obviously made a comment on it. And he has so much swag to him that, you know, he would go into a story, talk about the Bush push, like in detail about how crazy that weekend was. And just all the USC days. I mean, he had, I mean, from the beginning, he kind of always was innovative in that way. He brought like kind of the celebrity status to USC back in the day. He, you know, tried to bring some of that to Seattle and just swag and energy. And so his stories are great. I mean, he's one of the best storytellers there are. And I appreciated that. But the guys there for sure have heard every story over the years. You know, I'm sure Bobby Wagner heard every story Pete has to tell. But I was all ears for most of the season just because it was all new to me.
And then even going to look at Pete, some of his videos went viral as far as, was he running routes, right?
Yes, he was like throwing 7-on-7 against the defense. And like,
it was like escaping the pocket and everything.
And like made the defense look pretty shitty. Everybody was pissed until the next week. Everybody's just not letting him complete a single ball. But that's his mindset. He's throwing no looks and stuff in like warmups. He was different. And then, yeah, he had like Will Ferrell, Snoop Dogg. It was a little viral clip, like commenting on that. Cause those are all his USC connections. Those are all, you know, he's plugged in with all those people.
Yeah. How beautiful is Seattle? Like I got to go out there because we did a meet and greet when you first got signed. It was with you and Draymond, so we put on an event to allow you to, you know, meet the fan base and allow the youth and just the community to come out and get to know you. And then we did a live podcast there. But that was my first time ever there, and I mean, and thankfully I heard it rains a lot. But thankfully, when I was there, it was sunny every single day. It was probably around like 70 or 80 degrees and very beautiful, like so green, I was shocked. But you coming from the city, coming from New York, talk about, and you know, being from Chicago, so it's very different feel. Talk about just your first opinion when they said they wanted to, like when they flew you out and then you first touched down in Seattle.
I mean, it's intimidating. You're going to feel like the edge of the world. Like it's Seattle's up there. That flight, you know, to Chicago is about 4 and a half. It's definitely intimidating. And yeah, I mean, it's not much of like a, it's not a huge downtown, but it's just gorgeous. I mean, the trees are, it's kind of, I mean, still I haven't got used to it. I mean, and it is sunny. Like people say, you know, it rains and everything. For the first 4 months I was there, it was barely raining and it was sunny and like the lake is right there. And yeah, it's gorgeous. I think for most of the year, but everybody says like summertime Seattle, which I've never heard until I've been out there. But it's a scene for sure. I mean, you got planes flying. It's gorgeous. And I had no idea. It rains more per year in Chicago than it does in Seattle, which caught me off guard for sure.
That sounds accurate. It's always raining here.
Always raining here. It's heavy rain. Yeah. Over there, it might rain more days, but it's always like a light mist in the morning. And so nobody over there has umbrellas. Apparently, if you have an umbrella out there, you're a tourist. I learned early, and so different.
You just walk around and like...
Just like a just, light rain just get jacket, wet,
pause,
maybe.
But pause.
I got it. that's actually pretty weird, though.
Yeah, no.
It's just... It's probably good. Yeah, you probably walk around with like water resistant.
Yeah, it's like a little light wind jacket or whatever.
I gotta ask you this. You still have my glasses?
Your glasses?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I still have them.
All right, cool. I don't necessarily need them like ASAP or anything. So I went out there and I left some sunglasses out there. But they were like glasses, but also like real prescription glasses, but also sunglasses.
Oh, you're one of those guys.
But it was no.
Transition lenses?
They're not transition lenses. They're not transition lenses. They're like actual glasses, but then they come with like a magnet sunglasses that you can put on. So when I'm cool, looking cool in the sun, I actually got perfect vision as well.
That's an old man kind of move. The transition glasses are old man move. And also, that might be worse. The magnet glasses?
Yeah, you're sick for
you
that.
Just have them in your pocket and you just
I don't wear those glasses if it's like a maybe sunny day. it's a sunny day and I'm putting those glasses on, then there's no transition.
Also, out of all the times that you could have asked him for the glasses back, right now it's just interesting.
We're kind of talking about it. I mean,
I didn't know it was a prescription. I thought they're just sunglasses.
You just tried them on, huh?
No, I ain't tried them on.
No. They're five.
He's trying to catch you.
They're five.
I didn't know those are prescription glasses you left.
Let's change.
That's the only reason why I like cared about them.
I thought they were just shades.
Nah, we could buy them.
I might have given them away or something. No, they're at the house somewhere.
So right now, like, we're in the middle of NFL free agency. Mm-hmm. Can you provide some insight? Like, what is that like as a player going through that process?
Yeah, I would say for the top 5%, it's exciting, and you're having basically a bidding war, over your contract or whatever. Everyone, when I was hitting free agency, was saying, "Man, you're gonna be so excited! It's gonna be fun! Like, you're gonna love it." And I hated it. Mm-hmm. It was ass because you're just waiting on calls. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I'm a little bit type A where I want to be proactive. I want to be engaged in things, and it was a lot of okay. My agent's talking to people. I'm not.
Yeah.
So it was a little, I mean, it's kind of like the draft all over again for me. It was just like, damn, you're waiting and waiting just to hear something. Yeah. I know a lot of guys go through that. I know a lot of guys, you have let's say in the initial goings, you have, let's say on a good end, 10 teams are interested in you, interested in, you know, bringing you in or they like your game, but they don't know what their situation will be. They don't know who they're going to sign. They don't know who they're going to let go. Mm-hmm. And then when it comes down to it, you know, it gets narrowed into who actually is kind of on the verge of making an offer. Mm-hmm. And then you got the teams that make an offer. And so for me, it kept getting a smaller number, because the safety market last year was unfortunately bad. Mm-hmm. And so fewer teams, everybody's, you know, cutting lower deals, and yeah, it's just a waiting game. And as players, I mean, you try to get everything you possibly can get, because you don't know when it's gonna happen again. You don't know when you're gonna stop playing. And so I love seeing the big deals. Unfortunately, I'm in the safety market, mm-hmm. which isn't as valued as, let's say, like a D-line market or a quarterback receiver market. But you know, I'm happy to see my guys getting theirs for sure.
Yeah. And obviously, looking back, it's easy to say now because you went to Seattle, you had a great year, all of that. But when you were about to exit New York, did you want to stay with the Giants at that time?
I did. I definitely did. I am somebody Sean probably knows, is that I just like comfortability. Mm-hmm. I like, you know, knowing what I know. I like being in my, you know, when I'm out here in Chicago, I'm just kind of low key. Mm-hmm. And it was that. I knew everything from a staff wise, from a playing wise, I liked my routine. Mm-hmm. But, you know, things just didn't shake out. Still have love for a lot of players in that locker room, a lot of staff over there, but I just knew it wasn't working out. They didn't value me the way I valued myself. And so I made that call. And Pro Bowl later, it worked out for me.
Yeah. And it was a team that drafted you too. Cause like, you went to the same high school all throughout high school, went to the same college throughout. So that was your first time switching teams like that.
It's weird because, I mean, you have rivalries and, like, you know, in the division, like, you don't like playing the, when I was over there, Eagles, Cowboys, and Commanders now. And then you just go to a whole other division, and those kind of, it's weird. Those division rivalries kind of don't matter anymore.
Yeah.
And you have to embrace a whole new culture. It was weird, and it was honestly intimidating at first. But like I said, you just got to kind of bet on yourself in those situations, and I believe my game was where it was. I think I'm certified. Not many people saw it, but Seattle did.
Yeah.
It was a good year for me.
Absolutely.
What do you think about the fans who get upset at a player for leaving their team that they're like faithful to for going to get a raise?
I mean, I don't think anybody takes it into a perspective of their own situation. Say you have another company that's offering you more money. Most people in this world, in this country, are going to take that. I think, you know, fans are fans for a reason. They're not really fans of players. They're fans of cities and of teams. So that's what that is. I mean, basic example is Saquon Barkley. I mean, you see some of the flack he caught, which
Tiki Barber.
Tiki Barber's like, crazy.
You're dead to me.
That's crazy.
That's so aggressive. He was kind of on I'm about to pause myself. He was kind of on – he was tough on Saquon's entire time being there. And say, I mean, talk about being selfless. That dude was putting on a line every year and to not getting many results back because of what was, you know, perceived to be around him. So, I mean, shoot, he wanted to get paid. He got tagged last year, wanted to get paid. Obviously, I don't want to speak for him, but
yeah.
You got to get yours at some point. I mean, you can only play this game so long. And he's a running back. He's somebody who's taking hits.
For years.
You got to get, I mean, he's 6 years over there. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the fact that it has the Eagles is kind of funny.
I love that.
Oh,
there,
my gosh. And
that game's going to be wild.
I love that.
Hilarious.
Can I read the quote really
yeah,
quick?
Yeah, read the quote. Yeah.
Tiki said, "You're dead to us, Saquon. Good luck. You're dead to me." As a grown man, that's such an aggressive thing.
Now, is he actively around the facility, no. Or is it just, or
he's
is that
an analyst?
No, he's, I mean, he has a radio show. That's like a New York radio show.
WFAN,
yeah. And that's a big show, Tiki and Tierney. I was on that show a bunch. I just know him and Saquon. You know, because, you know, it is what it is. But that quote is crazy, though.
I mean, it's wild.
You got to get yours. And
what did Saquon reply to that?
He said, "You've been a hater since I got to New York, and all the dead to me talk, don't smile in my face when you see me."
But going back into it, if you're that player, you are producing for your offense. You, I mean, out of the backfield, catching passes, running the ball. When we played him, he wasn't playing, and, you know, we held him to 3 points. I mean,
yeah.
He is a factor. He's Saquon Barkley still. And so he wants to be compensated as such, especially when you see what the top guys are making. He wants to be in that conversation because he is in this league.
Sean, I'm going to ask you this just because I'm struggling to think of it. Other than Saquon Barkley and Daniel Jones, name like two or three players on the Giants offense, skilled position players.
Paris Campbell, one of my homies. Oh, wow. Darren Waller.
Oh, yeah, he was there, yeah.
I think he was hurt a lot this year, though.
Yeah.
The guy from Tennessee, the receiver, fast guy. I don't know. Is it Highland? Hyatt?
Yeah, yeah.
Jalen Hyatt, yeah.
He was a rookie this past year. They're trying.
Oh, and Sterling Shepard. I know the
Evan
recessive.
Ingram?
Shep, free agent as well. Evan Ingram, no, he's with Jacksonville.
I know. He's not there anymore, but McKinney was there.
I only say that to say, like, Saquon was there. Was their offense. Like, I can't
think of
anything.
He was the face of the franchise the past, whatever number, since he's been in the league.
Yeah.
They got DeVito, right?
They got Tommy DeVito.
He went to U of I.
Tommy DeVito, U of I guy.
What a guy.
Came in, did his thing.
He was at Syracuse before, though.
He was at Syracuse.
Can't forget about Syracuse.
Didn't he beat cancer when he was at Syracuse? I want to say that was a thing. Hold on.
Well, I might be wrong.
No, that's a different person.
That's interesting. Yeah,
2018, he had cancer and overcame it.
Oh, wow. Damn. Well, good for him. Yeah, okay. I'm a fan now.
Mm.
Yeah, props to Tommy DeVito, Tommy Colcutt. Oh,
I'm so sorry. It wasn't Tommy DeVito. It was the guy right before him. Rex Culpepper, guy right before him,
well,
who was also white and had the same build. My bad.
I was just like, nah. I was like, man, I don't know if he. Wow. Crazy story.
No, but I mean, they're rebuilding over there, and we'll see what happens. I mean, they got to make calls. The running back position is not valued as it was a couple years ago, which is crazy, but it is what it is.
Cutting back in, Saquon of the Eagles is actually insane. I love that move. Him with Jalen Hurts, with A.J. Brown, that's a scary offense.
I mean, they're talented. They got talented line as well. I know Jason Kelce retired, but that's a for real offense. He's only going to make them better.
Have you been in a position yet in the league to where, like, let's say you played with someone in high school or in college, and then you went against them in the league after practicing? I'm trying to think of someone. Like, I guess you said Kyron plays with the Rams. Like, have you had a situation where you played someone in college and practice every day, and then you ran into them in the league in a matchup or anything like that?
Ooh, I mean, I had a few. I mean, like Claypool, I played against him early when he was with the Steelers. I saw Miles when he was in Baltimore, Miles Boykin. Talking about guys I went to college with. Cole Kmet's, I guess, a big one.
Yeah,
that makes sense. He with the Bears, and I saw him in high school. And in college, yeah, he's probably the main one, actually. I played against him in high school, college, played with him in college and in the league. I think he's a star. I think he's a young star for the Bears for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Underrated. I think he's super underrated. Not too many guys. I mean, like Kyron was younger than me.
Yeah,
I never played with him in Notre Dame. Did you play with him?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I play with probably everybody.
Yeah, Sean was there forever.
I probably play with everyone.
Sean caught, he caught probably 10 years of range at Notre Dame.
Bro, it's ridiculous. From the oldest player being like Ronnie Stanley to he might be like year 8 in the league now, and to the youngest player being Xavier Watts, who's still there. So
mm-hmm. You play with Xavier Watts?
Yeah.
Dude,
when he was a receiver, right?
When he was a receiver, that's when you didn't even know him.
Yeah.
I definitely didn't. That's crazy.
But that honestly helps the podcast. Like, looking back on it.
Yeah.
Without a doubt, all the relationships.
Yeah. Like, looking back on it,
yeah,
it turned out to be the best thing that could have happened.
Sean, that's nuts.
What
up? I know. Like, I've seen Notre Dame transition from taxis to Ubers to, what do they have now?
You stealing bikes, yeah.
Who was the best player that you played in high school? Like you said, you played against Cole.
I mean, in hindsight, Cole's probably the best. I'm trying to think about who else kind of made it out. I mean, there's a few. Probably Cole was the best. I mean, he was a stud in baseball and football in high school. He played baseball and in college as well. Highest draft pick probably. Probably Cole.
You ever see Ty Isaac in high school?
No. Well, I saw him. Everybody had to go see him play. Man, he was a Chicago legend. I mean, that guy, I was in eighth grade, probably his senior year. Mm-hmm. So just missed him. But seeing those JCA games.
Unbelievable.
Just electric. I mean, his state game against Montini, I think.
He had like 500 yards, seven touchdowns.
Probably the most historic performance. And then on the other side, you have Jordan Westerkamp.
Yes, went to Nebraska.
Who also had like a ton of receiving yards and touchdowns. It was like the game was a high scoring ass game.
Ty had that crazy stat line and they lost by 30 points still. It was like 70 to 45 or something.
If you see Ty Isaac highlight tape, like basically you see a bunch of little white kids chasing him just for 60 yards.
It's like Jim Brown's footage.
It was nuts. I mean, folks is like 6'3", or he seemed like he was 6'3", 220.
No, we had him on a podcast last year here, and he is easily six. Like in high, but you got to think about it. In high school, a 6'2" running back is like DeMarco Murray type, Darren McFadden type of a running back, and you're not prepared to make that play, especially getting out of who knows what you have for lunch. You probably had a little bologna sandwich, a bag of Lay's and some fruit snacks, and then Friday night you got to go tackle a six-two running back who's committed to USC.
And it wasn't just him though; like their entire backfield. It's someone that went to Northwestern who was like, the fullback.
He was a little bit. My gosh!
And they ran a perfect offense.
Something with a J, I think.
Then they won the wing T.
Yeah, the wing. Yeah, like the beer or whatever the hell it's called.
It's like they definitely
they were
play
in my conference. So JCA was in my conference, Joliet Catholic. And they were, my eighth grade year is the first time in I don't know how long that Naz beat JCA. And Ty Isaac was there, actually. And first time ever they beat him.
Malin Jones.
Yeah. Just triple veer, quarterback getting low, handing it off, and just a tough-ass defense.
Do you think, because I think when I think of Chicago, maybe Illinois, I think of basketball.
Yeah.
Do you think football will ever catch up to the basketball players or like the known basketball players?
I think that's happening right now. I think in Midwest you're gonna have O-linemen, you're gonna have kind of the I don't know what
that whatever, I guess that is unfair because I don't even know any O-linemen who are from there. I know there's a couple guys that on the Bears that are local Chicago. But in basketball, everyone's a star. So whether you're the five, I'm going to know about you. Like Jabari Parker, I'm going to know about you. From the point guard, I'm going to know about you. So I guess it's a little – like there probably are linemen that I'm blanking on, but I guess I'm only thinking about skill position.
Yeah, it's transitioning for sure. I mean, from Chicago, that I can think of off the top of my head is obviously me, Cole, Miles. That was my era. J.J. McCarthy went to my high school. Guy about to get drafted high. Yeah, went to Michigan. He's probably the biggest one now, and that I think will kind of set the standard for people that are known for sure. You have a lot of guys going to college, playing good ball. I think football is for sure on the rise. Basketball is always going to be basketball. There's hoopers here, but more people are getting known for sure. I feel like not from Chicago, but a tight end from the Lions, Sam LaPorta is from Illinois.
Oh, I didn't know that.
You just have kind of sneaky guys.
LaPorta balled, bro.
Yeah, Kyron Williams from Chicagoland area.
From St. Louis.
He is?
St. Louis, yeah.
Why am I thinking he's from Illinois?
Because it's basically connected, like the border of where Illinois ends and St. Louis begins. It's
that's
like,
not fair. That's every state.
No, it definitely doesn't count.
Yeah, I said St. Louis.
I have
talk to him. Don't talk to me.
But there's a school called East St. Louis in Illinois.
I have a car from St. Louis. Oh, because he played Boom with my brother. That's why I think he's like the 7-on-7 team. Mm. Oh, I know that. Mm. But I'll count him.
Yeah, why not?
We're on the way, though. I mean, I'm trying to set the standard for sure.
There's that one kid right now. He goes to St. Ignatius down the street. I think his name's like Justin Scott.
Yeah, yeah.
He's this 5-star D tackle.
Ohio State?
Ohio State.
Yeah.
But, there's some guys.
Northwestern actually has a game this year in the Cubs Stadium versus Ohio State. Very random, but I think that'll be really cool for the city.
They played Iowa there last year. Northwestern does that every year.
Yeah, they'll probably lose by
Ohio State
40.
By 45.
Dude, Northwestern's become terrible.
We know
they had Big Ten Coach of the Year though.
Because they came off of like the whole hazing scandal, and they won 5 games.
Fitz fired. I thought he was a good coach.
I thought he was a great coach.
He was there forever.
I thought he was a great coach.
Man, that's tough.
He recruited me.
I was about to ask.
I mean, it's tough. For those schools like that, even Notre Dame's in that category, it's going to be tough to compete with the money that's being thrown around in college ball. And
that's true.
Like Vanderbilt, it's a team that's in the SEC, us, Northwestern, like the academic, Stanford, the academic schools that also, you know, playing football. It's going to be tough. You got to throw some money at these kids now.
Let me ask you guys this. If you wouldn't have gone to Northwestern, if you wouldn't have gone to Notre Dame, where would have you gone? And like, was academics that big for you where you would have maybe considered a Northwestern or a Vanderbilt or a Stanford?
For me at the time, I would say Northwestern was my number two. At the time, I committed early, like in my junior year. I think I was the second commit in my class behind like Tommy Kramer, or maybe John Shannon or Tommy Kramer, one of the two. And so I was early because I grew up a Notre Dame fan. So it was kind of the highest I knew I wanted to get. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, after I commit, like the week after, I get a call from O State, Michigan State, and Michigan, just because that's just how it goes. And all of them asked me, would I decommit for their school? And so who knows?
It's a crazy question. That you were 16, 17 at the time?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's tough.
I was talking, I mean, it was literally Urban Meyer on the phone. And
Urban Meyer doesn't play.
Like, and just straight up. We didn't talk for more than a minute. He's like, hey, it's Urban Meyer, Ohio State. Just wanted to know if you would ever decommit to come to Ohio State. I just said no.
What a loyalty test
so
that is.
Awkward. But like I said, I knew what I wanted. Notre Dame is playing good ball. My last year in high school was the 2015 year, and they were whatever. They went to the Fiesta Bowl.
Went to Fiesta, 10-2
maybe. The trend was trending upwards for Notre Dame, and school, hour and a half from me, easy choice. But who knows? I committed early, so.
Ever walk into like really hostile environments? Obviously, like it's going to be loud and stuff. But did you ever go into environments where you're like, "Oh shit, they actually took that a bit too far"? Or is there schools where you go there and like there's little things that they try to do to throw you off, like the locker room super shitty or really small, or things of that nature?
Yeah. So away games, I think the most hostile environment probably for you too was Miami at Hard Rock. My sophomore year, so 2017, I think we were number 3 in the country at that time.
It was like 3-5 or 3-6.
That was and they were having a good year. And that was the year they birthed their turnover chain. And it was fucking chaotic. And we were getting smoked. We got whooped. I'm like, going to that game, I knew I was going to do my thing. I had a good matchup. And, you know, playing corner, that was the first game, I think, in college I realized I can have the best game I can have. And it doesn't matter it doesn't do shit for the game. Like, I can lock down at corner this one receiver, sure, and we can still get torched by 40.
Yeah.
And I had a good game, but the only thing I was going into that game thinking was, do not turn the ball over. Like, offense, do not throw a pick. Do not fumble. Do not let them get this damn chain out. Because if they took that chain out in this environment, the game's over. Like, it could be first quarter, game's over. And sure as shit, we throw maybe 2 pick sixes that game.
We threw three. One. We right out of halftime. Oof. We threw one, and he crit.
Oof.
Yeah. It was just a devastating play.
Oh my God.
Do not last time we had Ian on a podcast here.
And I'm not pulling it up.
Bro, he loves pulling up plays. So we had Ian here and we were talking about that game and they threw a corner out, cover zero. You know, Elko love cover zero and yeah. Like in the goal line. That's a tip for Notre Dame when they play Texas A&M this year. Mm. So I was like inside leverage and they Braxton Berrios actually ran a corner out and I was like, bro.
I remember that. But, it was unguardable.
But then I was just like, but that game was definitely a hostile environment. Like that was one of the games where it wasn't dangerous because I didn't think anything was going to happen, but they were throwing stuff at the bus when we pulled
That's
up.
That's what I was asking. Yeah.
Oh yeah. For us, it was dangerous. My wife, Julia was in the stands and she said that shit was crazy. She would never do that again. People were hostile towards her. And I told her not even to wear Notre Dame.
She shouldn't have, yeah.
And she didn't. She just had on, like, she wasn't wearing Notre Dame.
You're not from here.
But, like, in a really hostile environment, they, like, example is when I was in New York, maybe one of the years, at Philly. And Philly can get hostile, mm-hmm. too. When they know you're not cheering when the home team does something good, they're like, okay, they're clearly not for the other team. And that shit happened in Miami, and she just... chaotic.
Oh, I had family terrible. There too.
We got whooped. And that was probably the most crazy.
Bro, that game, I had a family friend of mine who actually went to Miami and they were like, hey, could you get me tickets? I'm like, yeah, assuming that they're going to wear Notre Dame stuff. So I get them tickets and they go to the game. And I found out after the game, like I didn't even really talk to them pregame or even see them after the game. I don't even think I saw anyone after the game. I was like, all right, we got to get out of here.
Yeah, we got to roll.
And Chad Klunder, right on, as I'm getting on a plane to go back, he's like, come over here. I was like, what's up? He's like, did you invite anyone to the game? I was like, yeah, family and friends. He was like, did you know they had all Miami stuff? And I said, dude, I had no idea. I'm really not trying to talk about this right now. We can talk about it later. But I got on a plane and texted my friend. I was like, yo, what are you doing?
What's wrong with you?
That's tough.
Yeah,
that's like tough.
That was the last time that I invited. Because
that's like
someone.
A rule too, right?
It's like because you got to go to the will call and get the tickets, and they're it's Notre Dame people. Section. Yeah,
exactly.
And so I was like, and we got cream, so they were probably the only people. Whoa, yeah, we got two. Whoa,
that's such like a seventh. That's like a seventh grade thing
to
say.
Why would you say that?
Creamed.
I didn't, even, but like the another option though would have been worse. Like what I was thinking.
Nah, you could have said like anything else.
No, nah.
Want to feel cream?
It probably would have been like, up. We would have got fucked up. But like, yeah, cream just crazy.
All right, I'll change the topic. You ready? We'll cut back in 3, 2. Yeah, you guys had 4 turnovers that game too. So turnover chain was thriving. That's tough. That's tough for sure.
Yeah. But after they beat, they put everything they.
Dude, get your head out of the gutter.
Dude, I'm not even. But like, I'm just saying though.
You
like,
to say you put everything they had.
No, they. Yes, I was about to say that.
I'm like,
but because like after that game, they went on to lose 2 games, and they didn't even like make. They were supposed to make the playoffs, and they didn't. That
to
year,
this
so.
Day, I get shit talked because you know whoever you play. It's either you beat them, they beat you in the league. And so every time I went to Miami, guy, they talk about that damn game. And yeah, I always say once Miami had to play in the cold weather later that year, they got whooped. I think it was Pitt.
They played at Pitt,
And it was a cold ass game. But we got smoked that game, whatever. But the away games in general, I think there's a general sense of kind of a, for me, I like them because it's like home, like you said, it's cool. Away games, I kind of have that, it's like, fuck you. There's the whole time you're saying, man, fuck these people. It's crazy to say, but that's kind of the chip that I bring in my that's my mental situation for away games. So I always appreciate that. It's different.
Looking back at this past NFL season, what was like your favorite moment? What was your standout game? What do you remember most?
I think for sure for me, I caught it was definitely the Eagles game. I mean, it was Philly. It was late in the year. We were kind of, our backs were against the wall. I think we lost like 3 or 4 in a row up to that point, and we were playing at that point. Maybe they were like a 10-3 Philly team. Mm-hmm. They just lost to maybe Dallas and San Fran, so 2 good teams, but they lost to them before. And so we kind of had, it was at home Monday night, and it was slightly raining, of course. And I had 2 picks, 2 good plays, 1 to end the game, and I think I won defensive player, NFC Defensive Player of the Week that week. Mm. I don't know. I think I was just kind of – I just try to do my job, to stay in line, play my game, kind of have my own swag, my own energy. I had a baby on the way, and so, like, my mind was kind of like, just fuck around and let's ball. Mm-hmm. And then let me just do what I have to do at home. Mm-hmm. And so I was kind of playing super free in that game. I made a statement. That game probably got me the Pro Bowl, honestly.
Yeah.
And that was like 4 turnovers in 2 weeks. I had 2 the previous game against San Fran. And so it was a kind of a good streak and good moment for me. I think it was November or some shit.
Talk about the moment when you started to realize like the Pro Bowl is something that's real. You know, that's something that, you know, will, you know, obviously came your way, but that's something that you'll be able to be a part of. And that's something that nobody can take away from you.
Dude, it was the biggest blessing to get the Pro Bowl because I had no idea. Like, until they told me I made the Pro Bowl. And I remember I was cleaning up some baby shit at the house. And and I got a text from my agent and said, congrats on making the Pro Bowl. Oh, he definitely texted the wrong person. Like, I'm just, talking shit, whatever. And then I'm like, wait, for real? I literally say, like, wait, for real? And he's like, yeah, first ballot. Like, you got that shit. And, I mean, it was crazy because it wasn't on my mind. You know, the year before when I was having a good year, my last year in New York, I was pushing for, like, the fan vote. I was like, people vote for me because that's a third of the situation for making the Pro Bowl. I was pushing. I might have got, like, top 10, maybe, like, number 9 in voting. Didn't make the Pro Bowl. This year, I didn't send a single tweet about Pro Bowls. I mean, I just didn't think it was an option because people viewed me and largely as like the third utility safety. Mm-hmm. Even though I was starting a lot of games and producing a ton, it just, my game was just going under the radar, I felt. But I got it off of coaches' votes and player votes. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, that was the most validating thing, I think, in the world for me. Like, the guys I'm lining up against are voting for me, and the coaches I'm going against are voting for me. I think because they just see the product, they know who they're playing against, and I think that's just the epitome of my game. I think, you know, like Sean, I play with Sean. Like, I feel like no one by surprise, personality wise. I mean, you know who I am, you know what I'm about. But if you know my game, you appreciate it and respect the game. And if you don't, then you just don't know. Mm-hmm. You just don't know my game. I think that's kind of been the epitome of me in the league. And that was such a validating moment for me, for sure. Obviously, people talk about, you know, Pro Bowls don't mean anything, but that's your, man, it's a shit lot for me. I was super excited, and to do it with, you know, my newborn baby, my wife, it was just, I mean, it was incredible.
Mm. What was one of the most memorable moments from going down to Orlando and playing in the game and doing the whole week of activities?
I think it was cool because, like I said, like I had respect from the guys that were there. Like, I'm going into it mentally thinking, like, these guys probably don't know my name. Like, I'm grinding. Like, they probably know about me, whatever. But I had, you know, some props being shared when I was down there. It was cool to get my whole family down there, my wife's family down there, the baby down there, and just have some fun and just play in the game. And I made a few plays in the game. We won the game, made a little extra money, which always helps. But, I mean, it was just cool because I know, you know, personally – of course, like every player in the league, probably, I think I'm the best safety out there. That's my mental. That's where my mental focus is. That's my pillar. I'm the best out there. I can compete with anybody, and it was like the first time that I felt like other people were seeing what I always knew, and so it was crazy.
Mm. Love that. How has your life changed since becoming a father?
Not at all. Since becoming a father, I was like, whoa. Since becoming a father, man, it's everything I wanted. I mean, you want certain things in life. I don't think I've ever thought, like, I want to be a, like, I really want to be, I'm going to be in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just happening for me as time was going on. But being a father is something I feel like I always wanted. I think, you know, I have a really good dad who sacrificed and did a lot for me to get to where he is and provide, and put me in the positions where I've been to succeed. And he did it without having a dad. Mm-hmm. And so I think I'm just trying to pass that torch. And I have a little guy who's just the best. He's about 3 months right now, and he's slowly developing his personality. But I mean, that's all I want to do. I mean, I just want to play football. Obviously, I love doing that, but I just want to have fun at home. Like something as trivial or small as shooting hoops in the backyard is something I've always just wanted to do with my now son. It's been incredible. And to be home, you know, back in Chicago and doing it around our family and everything is everything.
I love that. You know, my favorite part about doing content is too, like 15 years from now, your son's gonna be on YouTube, just like Googling you, searching videos, trying to learn more about, like, you know, how cool dad was. Oh, and he's going to watch this and be like, oh my God, he was talking about me when I was 2 months old.
Man, I hope 15 years from now he's saying that. he was like, man, this guy's corny. Yeah,
that's fine.
Oh, it's going to be a new word about it.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
We're fucked. We're all, we're getting closer to 30. Everything's going downhill.
Ooh-wee. Mm. No, I mean, it's cool. Obviously, when you're in this position, your life is, for the most part, captured. I mean, you can... Mm-hmm. Probably there's hundreds of interviews from me over the years, starting in high school, of me around football, me around whatever, and then it's all out there. You can find it, which is, you can see all the hairstyles of me, baby face,
didn't
no
have
beard.
A beard last time.
Yeah, no beard, long hair, short hair, all that stuff.
Yeah.
What is your, and this moment will come at some point, what is your take on, you know, youth playing football? Because I feel like now it's kind of like, obviously with the concussion cases and all those different things going on, like CTE and all that stuff. I think flag is pushed a lot more.
Yeah.
And you having, you know, a baby boy, I feel like that question is going to come up at some point with you and Julia, to where it's like, all right, is this a year he can play? You know, maybe hold off. What are your thoughts on that? And have you even thought about that yet?
I do. I mean, I weirdly was one of the, you know, it wasn't a thing. Flag wasn't as much a thing as us growing up, but I played flag before I played tackle. Then maybe I was like 9 or 10 when I switched to tackle. So from 5 on, I think it was cool just because it gets you understanding of like body awareness and getting around the game and doing things fundamentally, kind of, because you're not tackling somebody leading, you know, with whatever. But I think that's kind of the route I would take, is kind of introduce them to that. I think just body awareness is huge. As I've been reading up on stuff, you know, getting him in as many sports as possible, if he wants to play sports, like whatever, gymnastics when he's young, just to be able to like be spatially aware. And then, yeah, just continue that. You know, if he wants to play football, sure. Obviously I love football and I want him to play. If he's a hooper, I'll do that. Baseball, whatever. I think sports was a huge part of my life, so I want our family to be around sports. But I think for sure, me and you, I know you play multiple sports. I want him to do as much as he can until however long. And so I think that's my take. I think nowadays you have a lot of parents specializing in shit. Like, oh, we're going to train football. We're going to train baseball. We're not doing that over here. We're going to be doing it all. My kid's going to learn a golf swing at age of 3. And so I want him to be as well-rounded as he possibly can.
Hey, those sort of parents could be weird. This is an extreme example, but like Baby Gronk, you guys see that? Yeah.
Baby Gronk actually DM'd me to get on the podcast.
You're lying.
I swear.
He said no?
He hasn't been on the podcast.
He said no? That's
crazy. I didn't say no. I just looked at it and didn't get back to him.
I don't blame you.
You won't. I mean, you know me. You won't be seeing me being that type of dad.
Of course not.
I'm in general, I won't even see me being yelling, hopefully, at games or anything like that. I want to put him as much as I can, make him more rounded, but
I'm 50-50.
On what?
You're going to be
50-50. I'm 50-50.
Sean's
what, yelling at games?
No, like an intense dad.
He's
going
to be intense. He won't yell, but he'll be intense. I can tell.
Like behind closed, like we're training at 6 a.m.
Intense.
Yeah,
he's an intense friend.
He's a teaser.
We've
intense.
Been friends for 3 years. I still don't know if he likes me. It's like a feel out every time.
Every time I see him, from the first day I met him till now, that's kind of the general vibe.
Yeah, it's crazy, but we're all great friends.
But if he talks to you, yeah.
If we're friends, we're really good friends. I feel like I don't have like we're maybe friends or maybe not
that's
friends
real.
Type of thing.
If he says you're his friend, he loves you basically.
I love you guys. Yeah. I love
thanks.
You guys.
Thanks, appreciate it.
All right, last two questions before you get out of here. Mm-hmm. You're from Chicago, so I want your top 5 Chicago legends sports.
Oh, I mean, that's a good question. I feel like my era was definitely like Derrick Rose. I mean, you know, whatever accolades in the league, whatever people have to say, but if you're growing up in this area, you know, in the 2000s, 2010s, that, I mean, he was the guy. I watched him play at Simeon. I mean, he was just from Chicago, a Chicago legend. So Derrick Rose is just whatever. The Bears had some guys over the years for sure. I think similar to Derrick Rose talk is like Devin Hester. Yeah, everyone. I mean, if you had one of those jerseys, if you're growing up around here, those two were for real. In the same sense, I'm not a huge into hockey. Probably Patrick Kane is that for people who are hockey fans. I slowly became a hockey fan because they were just winning a ton, and he was just the man at a young age here. But all time, I mean, the probably the GOATs for me. I'm not saying baseball because I don't know too much about baseball guys. I mean, Sammy Sosa, Ernie Banks, Mr. Cub, I know is obviously people can talk about that. But Walter Payton.
Without a doubt.
I mean, speaks for itself, sweetness, never die easy, just tough as hell. Dick Butkus, RIP. Yeah. If you look at Chicago Bears standard, I think what they still try to be is everything Dick Butkus was as a player. Just tough, gritty. I mean, that dude was a menace. Of course, RIP. And then number one is Michael Jordan. I mean, he is the brand of basketball. People will fight you over talking about Michael Jordan in Chicago. And I love LeBron. You know, you like LeBron too, obviously. And I'm a LeBron guy. But MJ is the epitome of Chicago Bulls, of swagger. I mean, he's the brand. There's no one bigger than him, I think, in Chicago sports history.
Yeah, he's really the only reason the Bulls are still relevant.
For sure.
Honestly.
There was a silver era there.
Outside of Derrick Rose. He had a run.
That was a fun team. That was my peak of
they
Bulls
were
fan.
They were nice in 2K.
They were nice. And they had some runs. They met LeBron a few years.
Mike Dunleavy.
That's a random
He was a no, but he was a sharpshooter. And
Kyle Korver was a sharpshooter too.
Ed Tibbs. Sure. I mean, even Kirk Heinrich a little bit before was tough as hell.
Ben Gordon.
Ben Gordon. Lou Alding.
That was fun.
They had Aaron Brooks. Yeah.
Andres Nocioni, go back a little bit.
Carlos Boozer was a little later.
I met Joakim Noah recently, and we were talking at the end of the conversation. I was like, yo, by the way, like when you dunked on Paul Pierce in the playoffs that year, I was in eighth grade, like peak Bulls fandom, thank you. And he just started laughing. But do you remember that game?
I don't. I'm not a huge fan of Joakim Noah. He kind of hates on Cleveland.
That's why I don't like him. Legendary speech.
That's fair.
Yeah, I don't understand.
No, but that for us, for sure. And that, I mean, we were kids basically. That was so fun. I went to so many games. United Center is one of the best stadiums in basketball. I mean, that was peak. Obviously the 90s were fun. Can't beat that winning, but Derrick Rose, man, he was close a couple times.
Yeah.
Nothing better.
I was going to ask you a top five Notre Dame, but I don't really think that matters.
Top five Notre Dame?
Football. Yeah. But
there's too many.
That's what I was going to say.
Tim Brown. You could do like.
Yeah.
You'd have to limit it maybe to era.
I mean, as of late, obviously, Manti is up there for us. Golden Tate.
I met Golden Tate recently. Really cool dude.
I mean, that dude was a stud.
Oh, he's a big fan of yours. Big fan of yours, too, by the way.
I played with him a couple of years. That's my guy. He got me my first set of golf clubs.
Nice.
Yeah, Callaway.
Great investment right there.
He hooked me up. He got me into it. Jalen Smith, I think for us, for sure. That was like a big brother to me. And I played with him in the league, which was really cool. Kyle Hamilton has to be up there. Harrison Smith has to be up there. I'm safety, so I'm biased for sure. I'm sure there's a quarterback there, Brady Quinn maybe. I mean, the bus was a little older. There's way too many Notre Dame guys to talk about.
Yeah.
Most Hall of Famers ever.
Do you still follow college ball now that you're in the league?
A little bit.
Yeah. What did you think of their season this past year?
I think a lot of young guys, I think they won some good games. I think they lost some tough games. I think they have some studs. I mean, our guy, Ben Morrison, we're excited for his next season and just see what he does. I think he's a stud, and they have some studs this year. Obviously, Xavier Watts had a great year, led the country in picks. There's some promise. And Freeman, I mean, I just want him to succeed so bad. Yeah. I think the players love him. The fans love him. I think he's a former player, so he gets it. He's one of those ones he gets in, so we'll see. We'll see how they do.
Yeah, in 10 years from now, or 20 years from now, we're going to go back and be corners and safety coaches at Notre Dame. Oh, I'm going to put that out there.
Yeah. I will not be a college or NFL coach. I'm going to coach high school ball. I don't know. Just maybe. I mean, I'll coach high school at the most if I even want to coach. Yeah. I don't want to be traveling. I've done that my whole life. I don't want to go be recruiting kids and that's traveling. Right. I just want to stay posted up and just raise my family.
Being a college coach seems like it'd be like exhausting. Recruiting, that's why, especially with the transfer portal now. Like,
I see a lot of coaches now trying to get to the league.
Yeah.
Get out of it. It's hectic. Mm. There's too much going on.
I'd just be throwing bread. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, true.
But at this point, it's like, yeah, bro, you might be here for 1 year. I don't know, you know, depending on if you are actually good and if you're actually going to play a lot.
But we're going to get you here.
And I'm going to do, you know, what it takes to get you here. And I think I'd be a hell of a recruiter. But outside of that,
you know ball, though. I think you'd be a good coach. I play ball. I like it, but I don't know. I'll coach some AAU basketball, maybe.
That'll be fun.
Yeah, that'll be fun. That's about it, though.
For Varsity House Podcast, I'm your host, Sean Crawford, co-host Elliot Montanez, and our special guest again, Julian Love from the Seattle Seahawks. Appreciate you coming on. We'll do this again. I told him, like I said, Kyle Hamilton is the only second time like guest appearance on the show, and you see what he did this year. So we'll have to follow up next year. No pressure or anything, but we'll follow up next year with you, after you have a great season and do your thing.
Of course, man. Thanks for having me.